Chain, chain, chain.
Chain, chain, chain.
Chain, chain, chain.
Chain, chain,
chain. A little Aretha Franklin to start our program today, talking about chains, and we're going to be talking about behavior chains when it comes to your pet with our guest today, Patricia McConnell. Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, international speaker and author. She co-hosted Calling All Pets with me for 14 years, a long, long time, and it was a lot of fun. We're going to talk with her about behavior chains, and we're also going to hear about the upcoming Midwest Championship Sheepdog Competition. What these dogs and their trainers go through in this competition is absolutely amazing. And I hope you have a chance to see it in action. We'll be talking about that. And certainly taking your questions about the competition or maybe about your pet's behavior and that behavior chain. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Patricia McConnell, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always fun to be here.
You know, before we get into the whole business about behavior change, a chain is fascinating to me. But so, too, is the upcoming sheepdog competition. It's the Midwest competition,
Midwest Championship. And this is a sheepdog competition on the biggest, baddest field in just in anywhere east of the Mississippi, for sure. It is beautiful. It is huge. It's outside of Hudson, Wisconsin. And what these teams of dog and handlers are expected to do, especially in the open class, which is the highest level, which me and Maggie just moved up to. So we are babies. If she can complete just the first part of this course, seriously, she can complete the first part of this course and just find the sheep and bring them to me, I will be thrilled because the sheep are going to be 350, 400, 450 yards away. Now, you golf. You know how far that is.
Yes, I do.
So imagine, imagine standing at a post and sending your dog that far away. You can barely even see them. It's very intimidating and exciting and really fun. And it's great spectating because it's – I love these things because it's relaxing. It's sort of like some people think of golf. I know some people would snort and laugh at us, Larry, but – but it's relaxing because it's beautiful. You can bring chairs or bring a picnic blanket, sit out on this grassy hillside, family friendly, hang out, free parking, not super crowded.
Beautiful sight.
Beautiful scenery, and watch these exciting, time-limited exercises where dogs have to move sheep through this complicated course, and it's time-limited, and it gets really exciting. So it's just, it's really a fun thing to do. It's Labor Day weekend. It's August 30th, Friday, which is a great day to go, by the way, because not many people do. So it's sort of like you and the handlers. And by the way, it's the first day. The sheep are imported. They don't live there. So the sheep will be brought in the night before. They've never been there. And they're like, what are we doing?
Man.
And some of the dogs have run on this course before. Some of them haven't, like me and Maggie. And so it's sort of like, woohoo, it's sort of extra exciting because you sort of never know what's going to happen. And then so it goes through Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Monday, Labor Day, is the, to me, most exciting day. It's the day of the double lift where the top 10 teams from the days before, and these are not all but mostly professionals. I mean, a lot of the people who are in this – this is what they do for a living. They raise, train stock dogs. They sell them for as much as $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 to farmers and to competitors. They do seminars all around the country. So you're seeing literally some of the top teams, top dogs, and top people in the country. And they have to do this incredibly ridiculous exercises. They go get one set of sheep from 700 yards away. Then the dog, they bring them partway back. And then the dog has to look back. That's the cue. Look back. The dog is to then turn around, look in the other direction for sheep 500 yards away, bring them back, bring them all together, move all 20 sheep.
Both groups.
Both groups together, then move all sheep, of 20 through this complicated series of gates way far away from the handler. Then the handler has to and dog have to work as a team to sort out 5 sheep with collars on them, like Lord of Orange collars, from the other 15.
It's just unbelievable.
Oh, it's just insane, and it's crazy exciting, that this international shed it's called. So that's Monday, Labor Day. That doesn't start till 9, about 9 to 3. The others are from 8 o'clock to later, whenever we're done. But it's not expensive. It's $10. Children under 10 are free. Free parking outside of Hudson, Wisconsin at Badlands Snow Park.
And a little food there?
There's food. There's not only is there food, but there'll be food that's actually raised at Kinney Park.
Mm.
I think it's going to be pulled pork, but I'm not sure. So there's lunch there. It's just a really, really fun thing to do. It's a great family-friendly, relaxing, goes on rain or shine. So if it's like maybe isolated thunderstorms, there's a huge tent. You can sit under the tent, let all the rest of us get all wet. No. You're good. You're fine.
You have to sit out there in the rain, though. When do you know when you are actually working?
No,
they don't tell you.
I don't, because the running orders aren't posted yet.
No.
So yeah, I'll be doing some announcing on Sunday and Monday. I'll be doing some announcing. A lot of us will be volunteering to do that, just to help people understand what's going on, because it's really nuanced. And the more you know, the cooler it gets.
Marty in Duluth, Minnesota has an experience to share, I think.
Love it.
Hi, you guys. Patricia, how nice to hear you on the radio again. I really loved it when you were on more regularly. Perhaps you have seen this. Back in the day when David Letterman had a show, he, up on the stage,
yes,
had a handler with a dog and 5 or 6 sheep. And the dog sent the sheep up the aisle of the theater, through the lobby, out onto the sidewalk, and into a taxi.
I love that you brought that up, and I remember it so well. Anybody, how could you forget it, right, once you've seen it? I'm not sure who the handler was. I think it was Tom Wilson. I'm not positive. That's probably wrong. Somebody correct us. Yes, somebody correct. On the streets of New York. And he said afterwards he had never, understandably, can you imagine how terrifying that was?
Oh.
I would most be terrified that my dogs would get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, that one of them would run out into the street. But what a nightmare. What a gutsy. I can't believe he agreed to do that. What a gutsy thing to do. I love, Marty, that you brought that up. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. I bet you could go online.
Oh, I bet you can. David Letterman, sheepdog, yep.
And find that. Oh,
sheep into a taxi. No?
To get him to get in a taxi.
Yep. Yeah, he had several dogs. He had more than one dog. He had, I don't know how many, maybe 3 dogs. And yep, sheep don't go into taxis on the farm much. Just want to say. One of the things at the sheepdog competitions is you have to get the sheep into a freestanding pen. And sometimes they literally just walk in, but that's really rare. Most of the time they're like that. We're going to die in there. So it's incredibly... And takes incredible amount of subtlety and finesse for you and your dog to work. Excuse me, for you and your dog to work just right on a microsecond level to get them to go into that pen. It's way cool.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today, we're talking about the sheepdog trials that sound absolutely fantastic. Labor Day weekend in Hudson, Wisconsin. And we're also going to talk with her about something called a behavior chain, and how it relates to you and your pet. So I hope you'll join in along those lines as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. So what is a behavior chain?
You know, it's a way to teach your dog the opposite of what you want. But it's also,
I'd be good at that.
We all are. I just wrote a blog about it a couple of weeks ago because I got sucked into one. So
you did.
It's just really easy to get sucked into. And so I'll tell you my story, right? And then I'll give you sort of the most common kinds. So my Maggie, my border collie, was afraid to walk in the woods, which is a place where we often walk. It's on a friend's beautiful, beautiful farm. It's a beautiful walk through the woods. And she was there a few weeks ago, and there was a dog fight between other dogs. And it was one of those really loud, two males make as much noise as possible, and it's very scary, but nobody was hurt. It was a lot of pounding of chests, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I grabbed the collar of one dog, and he literally was like, oh, where have you been? Thank you. Thank you. Just did not want to be doing this. So, but it was very loud and noisy, and it terrified Maggie, who is... she's just not the bravest dog in the world. As a matter of fact, really nasty sheep can scare her. So it'll be interesting to see the sheep that come out. Anyway, so Maggie is now afraid to go in the woods. So the next time we went, she hung back and she was like, oh, I'm not going to come. I don't want to walk in the woods. And so I called her to come to me, Maggie. Bup, bup. I called her to come. She came and I gave her a treat for coming. What did I teach her to do? I taught her to stand and wait for me to call her, and then she would come. So I'd walk forward 20 feet, and then she'd stop and stand and wait, and then I'd call her to come, and she'd come, and I'd give her a treat, and then I'd walk forward 20 feet, and she'd stop and stand and wait from it, right? And
oh,
luckily,
boy.
I've done this long enough. It didn't take me too long to go like, whoopsie. So here's the most common one, which is really easy to get sucked into. Your dog's barking at the window, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're like me. You're not really a big fan. You love dogs, but not the barking so much, right? So they're barking at the window. You call them to come to you. Come away from the window. Fido, here, Ginger. Ginger comes, you give Ginger some kind of reinforcement. You pat her chest, you know, you give her a little ear scratch, you give her a treat, you play ball with her. And what did you teach her? So
go up
that's
and bark.
The chain is that they back chain, it's called. And that's an important ability to be able to link events together as one being predictive of another, right?
Yeah.
We couldn't function without that ability, and neither could dogs. And you can use it to your advantage all the time. But it's easy to get sucked into it where you don't realize it's happening. So, in other words, if your dog is barking out the window, you call it to come, right? It comes, you give it a treat, and then it goes back, it barks at the window, you call it to come, right? So that's the behavior chain that we all need to work on. And so what I did, for example, with Maggie is the problem was the calling her to come, right?
Okay,
and then
yeah.
reinforcing her for it, because she learned that by sitting or by stopping, she elicited a call to come for me. Like she knew she could get me to do something, right? Her behavior got a behavior for me. So rather than doing that, I lured her at first. I had some really great treats in my hand, and I lured her to walk beside me. And as she did, I gave her a treat. So she got reinforced for coming with me. And then later, as she started moving sort of forward farther, she started acting like a dog going on a walk. I would reinforce that. So if she went ahead of me and started sniffing around, so I was now reinforcing what I wanted rather than what I didn't want. So if your dog's barking at the window.
Yeah, that was, I'm sure a lot of people
want to know about that one. So what you can do is you can still use reinforcement. So you get a great reinforcement. I would use food in this case. I would use some kind of great food. You don't give a cue. You go to the window. You let the dog see the treat, and you move backwards away from the window. You didn't call it to come, right? You're just luring it to come away from the window. And then you might ask it to do something or not. Give it a treat, ask it to, you know, be cute, ask it to play bow, ask it to sit, give it a treat. Do that over and over again. And what's going to happen is if you do, especially if there's not, if there's five people pounding on your door, don't try this because
yeah,
your dog's
sure.
going to just, right? So maybe, you know, even you go, I do this all the time. If you go outside your door and you knock on it or you ring the doorbell, your dog will start barking, right?
Yeah.
As if there was a visitor. But you can control it because then you stop it. So then you go inside, you lure your dog away, you give it a treat. You do that three or four or maybe five times in a row, and most dogs on time number six, before you have to do anything, they're going to turn their head and look at you. Good. You're going to reinforce that. So now you're eliciting the behavior you want. Does that Does that make sense?
It does make sense, okay. Although it'd be nice to have somebody else helping you.
But. Yeah, it's great. You know, don't hesitate. If you are having a problem out there, don't hesitate to get a coach. Everybody gets a coach.
Yeah.
Right? The best athlete, the most brilliant people in the world, no matter what they're brilliant at, they have coaches.
Yeah.
And that's partly why they're brilliant. So don't ever hesitate to get a trainer who knows progressive science-based methods.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today, talking with her about a couple of things. We're talking about the Midwest Championship Sheepdog Trial, but we've gotten into this whole business of behavior change. Chain. Why do I want to say chain? Well, it is.
Yeah.
It is chain.
It could be plural. Sure.
All right.
Either way, Miller, you're good.
Join in with your questions, comments, or maybe experiences. Maybe you've got a behavior chain experience you could talk about, too. 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us at ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Miller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's behavior today with our guest, Patricia McConnell. Great to have her back, and certainly great to have you listening in. If you have a question for her about your pet's behavior, or maybe a question about the Midwest Sheepdog Trials, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. What do you need to think about when teaching a new behavior so that behavior chain doesn't happen? I can see where it'd be so easy.
It is.
Chain.
Yeah. I think the trick is to be very clear what you are actually reinforcing. You know, what happened immediately before you provided a reinforcement. Because reinforcement works in fractions of a second, right?
Yeah.
So you know, dog barking at the window, you're reinforcing the dog coming to you, and the dog is smart enough to chain all those things together and go like, if I go to the window, I can get her to, you know, and bark. I can get her to call me to come. So think about what happened immediately before you gave a reinforcement and focus on what the dog did. You know, this is what I want the dog to do, and elicit it in some way. Sometimes you can lure it with food or toys or treats or running away, et cetera, distract the dog, elicit it, and reinforce that.
We have Marjorie in Milwaukee with a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi, good morning. My question has to do with a young three-year-old Springer who is rushing at children, barking and acting ferocious and scaring them, and I don't quite know what to do.
Oh, that's scary for everybody, isn't it? I'm so sorry. That usually that's based on fear. A lot of dogs are afraid of children. It's really common. Kids just move differently. They have different voices. They move. They're loud. You know, they move erratically. It's really common for dogs to be afraid of children. So job one is management, and I know that doesn't cure the problem, but it's absolutely essential. It's really, really important to manage it as best you can. And so the most important thing for management is to be aware that just being there does not prevent something from happening. Dog bites happen in milliseconds. I can't tell you how many clients I had when I was seeing cases of people who was like, but I was right there, right? Well, there you were, you know, but you can't. Dog's reaction time is amazingly fast. So prevention is really important, and management is one of the ways to do that. But the other reason management and prevention is so important is because you want to change your dog's emotional response to children. So rather than like, oh no, it's a kid, it's, oh boy, it's a kid. And so you have to create as best you can, always using safety as a priority, situations in which your dog associates good things with children. So the dog's on a leash. The kids are with an adult who keeps them 10 feet away from the dog, right? No chance of an interaction between them. And the kids throw treats. work, you know, work with friends, work with people who understand, whose children, you know, part of what we all need to be doing is training our children to act appropriately around dogs, which most don't because they don't know, right?
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah.
They think dogs love hugs and they run up and they squeal at them and it terrifies them. So elicit friends who can help you set up hyper safe situations where dogs learn if a child appears and takes one step towards me, I get a piece of chicken. Maybe kids aren't so bad after all. You can also use other dogs. If you have one or if you have friends who have dogs who love kids, dogs are very responsive to social facilitators. So if they see another dog getting pets and treats from a kid and they're back 20 feet, they're like, whoa, maybe this is not such a bad idea. So that's another thing to set up. I strongly advise you to find a coach. We talked about coaches earlier. If you can find a professional trainer who uses progressive science-based methods, a lot of positive reinforcement, understands it's not all about dominance, but it's about dealing with ameliorating the fears of a dog, then if you change the emotion, then that changes the behavior. So good luck, Marjorie.
Good luck.
I know it's a tough one, and yay for you for being on it and wanting to do something about it.
Thank you very much for calling. Kevin in Eau Claire has something for us. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a 7-month-old soft coat Wheaton Terrier, and we've had several Wheaton Terriers through the years, and they've never been very food motivated. This one in particular is very food aggressive.
Mm.
And we have a 2-year-old son at home, and every time we feed the puppy, we have to take him out of the room because she's so ferocious, and she'll growl even if she's the only one in the room.
Wow, while she's eating?
Yeah, while she's eating, she growls at herself, growls at her food. Very ferocious type growling, which, you know, scary with a 2-year-old. And we haven't experienced it with our other Wheatons.
Wow.
No kidding, that's scary with a 2-year-old. That is a match not made in heaven, right? So a couple things I do. Obviously, you're managing it really carefully, so that's hugely important. Good for you. Keep it up. Maybe even gates to keep the 2-year-old out. There are a couple things I do and then a couple of resources for you. So in general, the plan is to use Pavlovian conditioning, counter-classical conditioning in this case, to again, we're trying to change the emotion. You know, why this particular 7-month-old dog is so nervous about its food, I am guessing it might have been a situation at a critical period in its development that something happened, or maybe it was the one that got attacked by the other puppies. You know, I wouldn't be, this is pretty extreme. So I would, growling when you're by yourself in a room, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if something happened very, very early on. So one thing I would do is I would start Pavlovian counter conditioning so that your Wheaton is eating dinner. Mm-hmm. You're on the other side of the room sitting down and you have chicken. Right? Maybe you're standing. I think I would stand in this case, actually. So you're standing, you have chicken, your dog is eating dinner, and you take one step towards the dog and you throw a piece of chicken close to the bowl. And then you back up. Then you take one step forward, throw a piece of chicken. So what you're doing is you're conditioning your dog to learn that if you're in the room with him and he's eating his dinner and you move one step towards the bowl, he gets something even better. So his emotion is going to be like, oh, it's good to have somebody in the room. That's a good thing. So I would start there. I would go very slowly and very systematically. There's a book by Jean Donaldson called Mine! About dogs who are possessive and protective and often aggressive around high quality resources, food especially, right? It's her booklet is, it's elaborate. It's very detailed. It's so detailed that I've had some clients who are like, I couldn't do this, but it's worth it. It's a small paperback. You can get it at dogwise.com. It's a great resource. It's the Amazon, although in a benevolent way, I have to say that parenthetically now, basically the dog world. So I would check out that booklet. I would get it. I would, again, manage it, and I would start this very slow counter conditioning program where it's not your 2-year-old, right? Just you, and then, you know, and then somebody else, another adult, etc. This is another example. Whenever you're talking about aggression, I love people to bring in a coach. So that's another way to do it. Kevin, I don't know who's up in the Eau Claire area, but I would search around to find somebody who could come and do a few house calls.
Yeah. And that, I've heard you say before that going slow, that is the hardest thing to do, isn't it? Because people want to, all right, they'll take a step,
yeah,
and then pretty soon they're taking five steps. And
yes, you're absolutely right, Larry. And the danger zone is around week three. Often you've made a lot of progress, and then you're like, we're done. Like, no, you are so not. You are not done. You have to do this over and over and over. It's like overstudying for an exam, you know, like, mm-hmm, over-practicing for sheepdog competition, right? You just have to do it over and over and over and over again. The other thing I would consider doing, because this is not typical.
Right.
To have a dog growling while eating when you're
not even
when
there.
It's alone in the room, I would suggest going to the American Veterinary Medical Association, to their page of veterinary behaviorists. Because there might be something physiological going on. So I would go on that website, see if you could have a phone consultation with a behaviorist, because or somebody who does alternative medicine, for example.
Yeah.
Something physiological is going on too, I think. It's pretty extreme. But the dog's 7 months old, so this is great. This is great that you're working on it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for calling. Good luck, Kevin. Appreciate your call. Tom in Madison has something for us. Hi, Tom.
Good morning to all. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Patricia. First of all, thank you. We purchased your book on separation anxiety in regards to the pet that I'm actually calling about, Bucky. He's a 3-year-old Lyme when he came to us.
Okay.
And some of the tips that we picked up really helped tremendously.
Oh, good.
Almost a year, and he's really come along. And another tip that I took off Larry's show was both he and the German short hair that we got out of a different shelter would just light up when the mailman put the mail in the metal box.
Yay.
And we removed the mailbox from the house and put it on a post in a milk can right next to the, it cured it. It took away the 20 minutes of after effect.
Brilliant.
That the dogs would have. And whatever the caller was that called in and suggested it to you guys that day, I would give him a gold star and a hug. It really worked for us.
We have a lot of smart listeners. You know, it's a great village out there, right?
Absolutely. The best. And Bucky the Wine, he has an issue with licking. And we don't mean himself or when he's got a small scuff from the dog park or something. It's us. And he will, you know, he'll come up and sit on the couch next to you and proceed to lick and lick and lick. Now, we tried to kind of do a little tongue pinch the first few times to try to get him to not do that. We've tried to season our skin to maybe take away that sweet, salty taste of human. And it just does not work, and he will not stop. It's, you know, and I think we could twap him on the nose or something like that, and it would have no effect. Of all the dogs my wife and I have had, we've been together 40 years, and we've had one from a puppy, and that Weimer on her, that was a Weim also, and he was smart enough to where if he had a thumb, he would have stole the car. This one is the exact opposite end of the intelligence spectrum. It doesn't matter. He came to us in tough shape, and we love him.
Aww.
Like we did. But, you know, we got him through most of the medical stuff real well, and the separation stuff is 90%. And but there's just a couple little things that are going to take a little more time. But, yeah, the licking is really driving us kind of monsters.
It gets irritating, doesn't it,
mm-hmm,
after a while. So, one, yay for you for rescuing this, you know, taking care of this Weimaraner. So sweet. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, I get this professionally. I also get this personally. Tootsie, our cavalier, she loves to lick too. Now, she'll lick a lot of things. Sometimes licking on other surfaces is a sign of abdominal discomfort, a very important cue for behaviorists and veterinarians that a dog is uncomfortable. But this is just licking you, it sounds like. It's not, you know, the floor or the cabinet or the wall or anything. I think sometimes dogs lick like that. It's a kind of a coping mechanism. It's like us playing with our hair or chewing on our fingernails. You know those things, mm-hmm, we do that just sort of self-soothing?
You and I used to flip a paper clip.
Yes. That's so true. And Larry and I did Calling All Pets. We both had our own paper clip. And by the end of the day, it was in as many pieces as you could make a paper clip into. I love that you remembered that. That's so funny. So got any paper clips, Nigel? We're looking at our engineer here. So, Tom, here's what I do is this is the first thing to try. Might not work, but it might if you're really consistent. It turns out that dogs don't like pat, pat, pat on top of their head any more than we do. People who work with wolves actually use that to get wolves to stop harassing them because wolves will harass you. They'll like start chewing on your pant leg just for fun, you know, not aggressively. And you can't, you know, what are you going to do with a wolf, right? So they'll just go pat, pat, pat. So here's how I taught dogs to stop soliciting nonstop petting, you know, the kind that goes on for 45 minutes. And you're like, okay, I'm sort of done now, but the dog isn't. So what you do is you go pat, pat, pat on top of the dog's head. But then the next part is really important. Then you fold your arms and you turn away. And if your whine starts to sort of lean in and lick again, you just sort of move your body, a kind of sort of a little body block. It's just like blocking access. You're like taking the space, right? It's not aggressive. It's not fast. You're just like, oh, that's my space. You can't move into that space. It works astoundingly well in a lot of cases. Will it work for Tom in, you know, with his Weimaran? I don't know. Yeah, it's not going to work the first time, right? But try it. It's astoundingly effective. So you have to do everything I said. You go pat, 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 fold your arms, turn your head and your chest, your torso away as a way of saying, I'm not interacting with you anymore. Because usually we do the opposite. We're like, we look at them, right? And we say, stop that. Stop licking me. Stop begging for petting. Stop pawing at me. And we're still interacting with them. And they're like, okay, we're still, you know. But do what dogs do, which is just turn away and like, I'm done with you. So that's one thing to try. The other thing to do is just teach him an alternative behavior. What do you want him to do? I would start, all of my dogs know, Tootsie, sort of, sort of. Tootsie gets a lot of small dog privileges, small old puppy mill rescue, now 15 years old, deaf and blind privileges. But Maggie, when we are done with Maggie, who will mug you for petting endlessly, hours, right? She knows, go settle down. Maggie, just go settle down. And what settle down means is I started by teaching her I'd have something she wanted and I'd take her over. I'd pat the ground. I'd get her to lie down. I'd say, just chill out there. It's not really a stay. It's just like, we're done here now. Mm-hmm. Go stop bothering your parents, you know, right? And so if I say, Maggie, that's enough, go settle down. She'll just leave and go lie down somewhere. So that's the other thing. You could think, you know, you could teach other things, but teach an alternative behavior. And in a pinch, chew toys are great. Go to the pet store. Get some safe, good, healthy chew toys. Let your dog chew on a bone for 15 minutes.
There
Have
you
a
go.
Little break.
There you go, Tom. Thank you so much for calling. And Rick in La Crosse, we'll go to you. Hi, Rick.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a veterinarian for 50 years, retired now, but I've worked with all sorts of dogs. What I have at my house is what I call ankle biters, little guys. We have toy poodles, and we've been raising them for years. And I think there's a big difference when you go from an ankle biter and then you get into the larger breeds, especially the more aggressive by DNA dogs. I think treats work to a certain degree, but I have never been shy about putting a shock collar on the big breeds.
No.
Okay. You can hit a big breed over the head with a stick, and it's not going to hurt them any. They don't care. And when you're dealing with some of the more aggressive breeds by nature, I think a shock collar, when needed, really helps because it's a split second between a calm dog and a bite. I mean, it's just that quick.
What do you think, Patricia?
Well, Rick and I obviously don't agree, you know, and as in all things, dog behavior and training, like everything else, it's a science and a sport and an art, right? So I do agree that punishment, which is what we're talking about, that punishment can indeed be effective sometimes. I mean, there's no question about it. But it has a lot of costs to it. And it's basically, in my worldview, it's the absolute last thing to go to. You know, there's a great hierarchy, a great website to go to. Susan Friedman, Dr. Susan Friedman, has a wonderful website with a kind of a hierarchy of how to intervene in a with a behavioral you don't want. You know, and there's a hierarchy. And the very, 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 very end is to use some kind of punishment like a shock collar. There are a lot of disadvantages of them. You know, one is you're not sure the dog knows what it's being punished for. Two, it can destroy the relationship between you and your dog. With aggression, most commonly what I found is that it teaches the dog, say a dog is afraid of children and is growling at children. You put a shock collar on it, it teaches it not to growl at children. So children walk right up to it. It's still afraid of them. And now there's a child right in his face. What's he going to do? He's not going to growl. He's going to bite him. So it's a very powerful tool. It's like a scalpel. I think you have to be exceedingly careful with it. And I used it twice in 30 years for dogs who were going to be shot because they were chasing livestock. And that was it. And I still hated doing it. So we just have to agree to disagree. But that's my take on it anyway.
And you use a different kind of training when you're working with your Maggie. And you've got that sheepdog trial coming up.
And talk about the power of positive reinforcement. Because your dog can be working, as we talked about earlier, your dog can be working 300, 400, 500, 700 yards away from you, right? And I'll tell you, I don't know one handler who uses a shock collar. Not one of them. The primary way you train your dog is with positive reinforcement, which is if you do things right, you get to keep controlling the sheep. You get to keep working. So when they mess up, I'll say, Maggie, lie down, and it might be a little louder than that. and then I'll just say, okay, we're done. Come back. Now let's try again. You know, let's start again. So this sheepdog excitement, the Midwest Championship Sheepdog Competition, it's over Labor Day weekend. I'll be there along with not another category of handlers who are professional, some of the top amateur and professional handlers in the country. It's outside of Hudson, Wisconsin. You can go to wwsda.com for more information. That's wwsda.com. It's Labor Day weekend, Friday through Monday. It's inexpensive, free parking, incredibly fun, relaxing, and exciting at the same time.
And it just amazes me to imagine a dog going 700 yards.
Yeah.
Then running another 500 yards to get another group, bring them together and take them through us.
One thing people often don't think about, these dogs are amazing athletes. And part of our job, if you're running in this big open class, is you have to keep your dog in shape. So I mean, there are a lot of people, I don't have this ability, but a lot of people will run their dog for an hour behind an ATV, for example.
Oh.
I mean, this is big time stuff. You know, these dogs are Olympic quality athletes.
And it all happens on Labor Day weekend.
Outside of Hudson, Wisconsin. It's just an hour from Eau Claire. It's accessible from lots and lots of places. It's, Larry,
a beautiful place.
I'm going to get you up there. I am Mueller. I am getting you up there sometime. I'm going to do it. I'll drive you up myself.
well, come join us.
There you go.
Labor Day weekend for the Midwest Sheepdog Trials. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Patricia, it's always fun to have you with us. You'll come back again, I hope.
Oh, I love it. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Patricia McConnell, she will be back, and we will talk with her again. But we're going to switch gears with you a little bit. It's hard to believe 100 years ago, women in the United States did not have the right to vote. And we'll talk about the history of that a little bit, and about a great event that's going on at the Smithsonian, the American Women's History Initiative, with its director. I'm Larry Mueller, here on the Ideas Network.